Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. I got to tell you, you know, the quote of the day has got to be Jay Inslee saying reviving unions is absolutely intrinsic to ending income inequality. And again, as I said, if you go back to the 60-minute piece with billionaire Ray Dalio saying it's a national emergency or should be declared a national emergency if he were president, this is the stuff that Democrats need to be. This is the message that they need to be throwing out there. They need to be hammering on this stuff because, look, you know, the reality is Trump has done a great job of convincing working people who have lost their jobs through our insane trade deals, the folks who are struggling to think that somehow the billionaire is their savior. It is just crazy. Anyway, I got lots to talk about. I remember last week we talked about the Delta signs. Do you really want to spend that money on union dues? You could get a cool new game system, or you could take the family to a baseball game. Yeah. How about you just pay me a reasonable wage and I can do those things anyway? Anyway, here to share some thoughts on the union busting tactics at Delta. Also, maybe some thoughts on income inequality and Jay Inslee. I've asked Sarah Nelson to come talk with us. Sarah is the president of the Association of Flight Attendants, CWA, and one of the greatest labor leaders in our country today. Sarah, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, Rick. Nice to be here.
So I want to get to this the Delta thing, the signs that that got so much attention last week that have been around for about a year now. Is it really better to have a cool new game system than to pay union dues?
Like, these people, this was incredibly tone deaf, you know, and the workers at Delta are so used to seeing this stuff that I think they practically tune it out. You say it's been there in the workplace for about a year. But when it hits the light of day, the rest of the world is shocked at what Delta does day in and day out to try to, you know, keep workers from joining a union. And we know, we've been through three elections with these people. We know what they do. In the last election alone, they spent $38 million to beat up on the union and try to deny the flight attendants from having the protections of a union and a union contract. And this is really, and the reason that they do this is because they keep more money and more control. When we were in the last round of bargaining with United and we're costing out the contract as we're finishing that up, sure enough, we pushed United hard. But it's very difficult when you're up against another carrier, another major carrier that is non-union. Because at the end of the day, the same size operation, United operates with about 4,000 to 5,000 more flight attendants and $100 million more a year in cost for our contract than Delta pays to run the operation with the flight attendants at Delta. So that's the difference in a union contract, and it's seen in work rules, and it's seen in pay protections, and it's seen majorly in health care and in retirement. And these are just things that Delta doesn't have to pay. And they also have the ability to change things on a moment's notice. They love to have that control. So they're willing to pay whatever. They're willing to do whatever. But I'll tell you what, the union busters got really lazy on this one. These are the same people who ran Northwest Airlines. And we represented the flight attendants at Northwest Airlines. And during the Northwest Airlines bankruptcy, management put out this very helpful list for the workers about things that they could do to help save money as they're, you know, taking their pay and taking much of their benefits, and people were really struggling. And so it's this long list of all these things that people can do to save money. And on that list was, you know, you should really look in the trash to see if someone has thrown out something that might be usable.
No, come on. No.
I swear to you, this is the same management group that did that allowed some union busting law firm to put together this ridiculous flyer that says somehow it's you'd rather play video games than have a union contract. I mean, it's absurd.
I would love to get a list of the things that we could do for less wages. I guess eat less, you know, maybe breathe less. You know.
Yeah, you know, I mean, age-old discriminatory practices, they'd probably be thrilled about that because they'd only have to give flight attendant uniforms in a certain number of sizes like they used to many years ago. Yeah, they'd love to have people eating less for many reasons because there's not a focus on people here. There's not a recognition that this is a people business. They don't really care what flight attendants are doing on the front lines to really make the airline work and make the airline fly, or any other workers for that matter. it's a cost item to them, unless we make them pay more. I mean, right. That's the only way these things change.
No, you're absolutely right. And it's not just flight attendants. I mean, it's all working people across. It doesn't matter the industry. You see these kind of union busting tactics all over. And when I sent that out, I got a bunch of responses back from people saying, hey, I've seen similar things like this in my workplace. And then the discussion about captive meetings and the discussion about, having to sit through all of this union busting propaganda. And then, of course, the Walmart and Target videos, the anti-union videos come up before you even start the job. And, to me, this is one of those moments where, we begin to highlight just how much time, energy, money that these companies have put into convincing you that you should act against your best interests.
Well, it's a billion-dollar business. And, for the workers who are at these companies having to face all this stuff, don't forget that they're trying to keep their heads down, keep their jobs, provide for their families. But when this stuff hits the light of day and other people see these things, you can see just absolutely how offensive it is and how dismissive it is of the workforce. And then, it really starts to shine a light on what corporate America has done. But, what corporate America has also done is gotten lazy, because as they beat back union protections and there's fewer and fewer unions to beat back, they're not as good at doing it anymore. And so they come up with these really ridiculous ideas. And, this is really dismissive of young people, too. I mean, this was aimed at the next generation. They don't have any idea how to connect with this new generation of really smart, active young people who are engaged, who are reading, who are connected to each other. And, this corporate America is in for a big surprise, because this next generation is about to boom in union organizing and taking back our country and reclaiming democracy and having a say in their workplace and making sure that they are not going to have it worse off than their parents.
No, I sure hope you're right. And, I'm hoping that the labor movement does embrace this. And I mean, you're one of the people on social media who has just been killing it lately. And reaching out and continuing the discussion. And I'm hoping the rest of the labor movement, is paying attention to what you're doing. And it's not, I'm not just pandering to you because you're on, but I really think what you've been doing and connecting with people is so important. And the movement had better figure out how to get involved in that.
Well, Rick, I got to tell you, I think that this is really about the rubber band breaking all over this country. I mean, this is not about individual leaders. There's going to be nobody who's going to be a savior here. This is about rank and file people who have had it. They have had it, and they're ready to fight. And all we have to do is help to, harness that and use the organization of our unions to bring that power together and to focus it on our fights, to define what's at stake, and to really help to use the resources of our unions to bring people together. But this country, I mean, when I said, hey, 2 million people are out of work, the rest of us are going to work in unsafe conditions. Some people are being forced to go to work without pay, all during the government lockout.
Right.
They say, not shutdown, but lockout. And I said, hey, we should probably talk. It's probably about time to talk about a general strike.
Absolutely.
Things have never been this bad, right? And I have to tell you, I really kind of thought that the response that I would hear is, are you crazy? We can't do that. And what I heard instead was, hell yeah, what are we all waiting for? We're dying out here. People are hurting all over this country. And the good news is that the labor movement has the answers for them. I'm not talking to progressive groups. Progressive groups have left the labor movement in the dust a long time ago. And all of a sudden, they want to talk, because guess what? Unions have the answer across the board. Not only can we organize and show real political muscle by organizing in our workplace and getting together and having more people engaged and being able to have a greater say in our democracy and our political process, but also we can push from the ground up. We can push on these corporations who are busy trying to extract more and more from the law, more and more from people's rights, so they can have more control and take more of the money. And we can hold them accountable right in our workplace so that they don't get away with that crap. I mean, the fact of the matter is that the executives that I deal with now are having to answer to their boards, who answer to the shareholders. And those are the people putting the pressure on them. What the labor movement has to understand, what we have to understand as working people, is that we can exert a hell of a lot more pressure by coming together and pushing back. And they are going to have to make a risk assessment every time. And we need to make sure that we are high in that risk assessment so that they are shoving some of the money our way and we're taking some of the profits that we help create. Because that is the opposite of the way that it has been going for the last 30 years. So we got to reclaim this, but it's not going to be that hard to reclaim it because people are hungry, people are hurting, people are fed up, people are understanding more and more what's at stake. It's not disconnected anymore. Like, everybody has all these separate jobs. You know, my members tell me, can you please get involved in the Lordstown fight? Because my husband is losing his job there, and we've lived here for 25 years, and this is going to upend our family. Everybody's hurting. Everybody has a story. Everybody is connected to the hurt. I know you're going to talk to Dan Maurer tonight, too, and he's going to talk about, you know, trade policy and how this is hurting workers and how we have to get engaged in this. And, you know, we have to understand, we have to be a part of these fights. But this is really just harnessing what's happening in this country right now.
Right.
And unions can do that and focus it and get people engaged right away. And the last thing I'll just say on that point is that I can't stop without saying, women, join unions, run unions. We're going to end the wage gap by doing that. We are going to inject a whole other set of ideas, and people who have been marginalized throughout their lives oftentimes are some of the best at being creative and problem solving, the least to lead with their egos, but with their hearts and their desire to fight for their families. And so, you know, we need women in this movement. We need people of color really stepping up and being leaders in this movement. And and they understand, you know, what it means to be cast aside, to not be listened to, and to understand the value of actually having a voice in your workplace.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, what you're talking about is the concept of solidarity, which I say, you know, every generation has to relearn what that means. And I think we're seeing that right in front of us. But from labor leaders, I want bold vision. I look at you as one of the people who, you know, when you called for a general strike and you said we should be talking about this, you know, it's something that I'd been saying for a long time. Look, in order for things to change, there has to be people in the streets. We at some point, you got to shut it down. When it's not working, you've got to do the only thing that working people, the only power that you have, and that's to fold your arms and march in the street.
You know, there's a couple things about talking about a general strike. Number one, what it says is that we're all in this together. We leave no one behind. It also says that we're connected. And it also says to people right away, hey, do you even realize the kind of power that you have by just standing up with your neighbors? And so it's a worthy conversation. And we have some big issues to resolve. And we should really be thinking about what our power and our leverage is, and we should be ready to use it.
Absolutely. And one of that being at the ballot box. I mean, today you had one of my favorite tweets that caught my attention, talking about Steve Sweeney in New Jersey, saying that we're told to be grateful to allies like Sweeney, who has been, you know, a thorn in the side of working people in that state. Even though he comes from labor and he was someone that labor fully, you know, helped get into that position. And we see that not just in New Jersey, but across the country where, and look, I'll bring up President Obama. I liked him. I voted for him twice. He didn't do what he told me he was going to do. He told me twice, looked me in the eye, said, we're going to pass the Employee Free Choice Act. We're going to get it done. And yet here we are not.
Well, and I'm going to get on the picket line, except where was he to be seen in Wisconsin? So, but, you know, we have to make our representatives represent us. We have to do that. We can't think that being a part of democracy is just going to vote every 2 years or every year or in every election that takes place. That's not how our democracy works. Our democracy works by being very vigorous about understanding who we're voting for, but then holding them accountable in between. And letting them know, you know, what's important to you. That's why it's so important that we protect the right to protest, for example, because that's the only way that democracy really works is if we're all engaged.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. Now, I've been talking about this Inslee interview that was published over at the Washington Post. I don't know if you've seen it or not. The governor of Wisconsin saying, look, you know, we need to undo The right to work stuff. We need to do away with forced arbitration. We need major labor law reform. We need to punish people who violate, all stuff that I'm going. Yeah, I've been saying that for every day of the 14 years I've been doing this show. Congratulations, welcome. How do we get that pushed through? How do we make sure that all of the Democratic field is on this page?
Well, I think, as workers have been exercising their power over the past year with more strikes than in U.S. history ever, and people are getting immediate results, some of these politicians are paying attention and recognizing that this could be a very different country by the time we get to the 2020 election. Because if we keep going at the same rate in an exponential fashion of workers standing up and understanding their power, which is where I think we're headed, we can completely change the landscape of the country between now and when we vote in the fall of 2020. And so the Democrats who actually want to be a part of that wave of union support, that wave of worker power, should be talking about these things, because this is what people want to hear. They don't want to hear another politician say, "I'm going to fix it." They don't want to hear another politician talk about what the labor movement did for us 70 years ago and talk about it like we're dinosaurs and extinct. They want to hear about what people are doing today, and they want to know that these politicians are watching what we're doing as workers and what we're doing as a labor movement to fight back right now, which is quite extraordinary and quite inspirational.
And get them willing to put on the comfortable shoes and march like President Obama didn't actually do.
Right. And, he didn't. But what did we do to make him march? What did we do? Did we fold our arms back and relax and think he was going to take care of us? I think we have to really look at our part in that and make sure that we don't repeat it and make sure that we do better.
Yeah, excellent point. Last question I had for you. We're seeing, I don't know if this is a comfortable topic for you or not, but it's in the news today. Missouri, the show me state, just passed another one of these highly restrictive anti-abortion laws. Not quite as bad as Alabama, Ohio, Georgia. A bunch of states are going this route. I see this as a women's working class issue. I'm curious what your thoughts on it are.
Well, this is what I'll say about this. This is frightening, but I think that we have to recognize that our rights are never absolute. We can't ever take our rights for granted. And women in this country are still not recognized as equal partners in this country, okay? So there is incredible misogyny. There is incredible discrimination against women. And now people have been given a green light to put, to put the pedal to the metal on promoting violence against women. If you look at the Alabama law, if you look at, how rapists are given a lower penalty than a doctor performing an abortion, this is really promoting violence against women and hatred against women. And it is absolutely a working class issue, because if we give a damn about the people that we work with, and the people who are beside us in our workplace, then we better stand up for women's rights, because this is half of our country, and in the last election, 54% of the electorate, and this is about women's health. We fight for health and safety on the job as union members. There's a lot at stake here, and there's also a lot at stake in terms of just having ownership over your own life. I mean, that's really what this is about. I find this very scary, deeply offensive. And as a union member who has held the hand of people who have been going through really tough health challenges, and you never know what someone is dealing with, who the hell says that any of this is anyone else's business about what happens privately? We pass all kinds of laws, and unions help to promote this, to keep employers away from what's happening in our own private lives and our health conditions. And how is it that this country can say that it's okay to get into the doctor's room with every single woman in this country and know their business? That's what this is about. And this is about basic human rights and respect. And there's no bigger fight that we should be taking on.
Now, we've got an awful lot of work to do, but I'm glad that you're out there fighting it. And as it continues, I'd love to have you back and share some more thoughts with us.
Thank you, Rick.
Sarah, great talking with you. Sarah Nelson, president of the Association of Flight Attendants. And again, this is one of those moments that, you know, you just, so many problems and so many things going on, so many battles and so many fronts to be fighting on, that, look, you know, that concept of solidarity right there. Great stuff. Really, really like Sarah. Let's take a quick break. Right back. Stick around. You'll listen to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. And the talk. It's